Welcome to the Canadian PGA Radio Show. Jeff Dykeman alongside Scott Pritchard. I want to be Scott Pritchard for a second, but I'll be Jeff Dykeman. You can be Scott Pritchard. We're back. Maybe we're a little bit rusty here, folks. We've been off the air for a few weeks, but we're back, Scotty, and we've got a great show lined up. Two great guests, both kind of from the playing side and the club professional side, but two guys, one at the end of his career, one at the beginning of his career. Our first guest, folks, would be Gar Hamilton, the head professional for Mississauga Golf Country Club, a guy who's a legend in the Canadian Professional Golfers Association and across the country, a man who's won events all over the country, four-time champion, club pro, won the Canadian PGA Seniors title, won a Canadian Tour title, had that Cinderella run at the Senior Championship in Essex that one year, the AT&T, Titleist Cup captain, 2 years in a row, mm-hmm. Broke through from the Quebec stranglehold on the Ontario team, and a guy, Scott, that you know quite well. Tell us a bit about your relationship with Gar Hamilton.
Well, it's a good one. We Gar and I worked together, obviously, with the Titleist Cup, preparing all of the things that need to go with that. And you know, Gar looks to me sometimes for some tips on certain players, and you know, that's an honor for him to look at me, because he's got a pretty firm grasp on what's happening, and you know, always very supportive of everything we're doing at the Ontario PGA, and when I was at the Canadian PGA as well, same thing. You know, Gar was one of the first guys that I spoke to doing the old press release for the Canadian PGA Seniors. He was actually the defending champion, but he had a small heart attack before in 2003. So he unfortunately couldn't defend his championship, and but he's recovered nicely from that, and you know, played in the U.S. Open, U.S. Senior Open last year, which was amazing. He's 60 years old, playing in his hometown, or his pseudo hometown. He was a member at Crooked Stick while he was playing the PGA Tour, and you know, he was able to qualify for that
event. Went to school nearby, I believe.
Yeah, went to school, exactly, went to Indiana.
Yeah.
And with a number of Canadians. In fact, the Quebec Titleist captain, Yves Tremblay, who's a past Canadian PGA Assistance Champion, he went to Indiana well. So there's a little rivalry between Gar and Yves there. And Gar's been great. Great ambassador for the Canadian PGA, Ontario PGA, all Canadian PGA members, really. And you know, he's just a all-around good guy.
No, I'm not sure if I said it, but I'll have you say it, Scott. We're having him on, as we should. Anyways, he's a great ambassador for the association, but there's a special reason why we're having him on, given some recent announcements. Tell us about that.
Right, Gar retiring after 23 years at Mississauga Golf and Country Club. The history of Mississauga, they've only had 4 golf professionals in the history of Mississauga, which is 100 years old. First, I believe, Gord Brightson was there for a long time, past Canadian PGA president and Ontario PGA president. The list goes on. And then, so Gar's been there. And quite frankly, I think he should have retired sooner. And maybe, you know, given the run, the story, Tom Kite at the Canadian, Canadian Seniors Open. Tom Kite, he was playing with Tom Kite in the final round. And after the round, Tom Kite said, "Gar, what are you doing? Like, you should be out here full time." Like, he's like, "Stop running after Mrs. Smith's." He said this: "Stop running after Mrs. Smith's head covers and get out here. You belong out here."
Yeah.
And, but you know, he had some issues at the club. I think, you know, members were, you know, "What are you doing, Gar?" And he didn't know. And, you know, I think the heart issue, you know, so, but I think he's made the right decision, decided to stay there, knew in his heart that, you know, that's where he belonged.
I think you hear guys sometimes too that, you know, it sounds great. Like, that one week must be just like a crazy week where it's so much fun. And you realize that I got to hop on a plane and go to Idaho. I got to hop on a plane and go to Hawaii. I got to hop on a plane and go. And it's just like, sometimes I think when you're at a certain age, either you're into it or you're not into it.
Right.
And maybe Tom Kite didn't know anything different. He'd been doing that for 35 years, regarded that for a while and kind of maybe had his kick at it. And decided, you know what? What a great opportunity to go back and work at a club like this. And
but if you talk to Gar as well, Jeff, like, Mississauga, I don't think there's anyone in the world that loves Mississauga Golf and Country Club more than Gar Hamilton.
Yeah, he loves it.
And that is what sets him apart from the other, from golf professionals, is that he wants to be there every morning. And I'm sure when we talk to him, you know, like, he wants to be there every morning and he loves it. Like, and he's generally biased against, you know, towards Mississauga. Mississauga is the best golf course in Toronto, right? Yeah. And, you know, other people may have their feelings on, you know, what course.
Every aspect of it.
He loves every aspect of it. And it shows. And it's something that is, you know, I think what draws people to Gar is that he's a real passion.
Well, we'll have him on and we'll talk about his memories playing and working and about the golf club and about, you know, playing with some guys. We'll ask him, I'm sure we'll ask him a nice Mo story as well. We ask all of the guys that know Mo, and he knew Mo quite well. But our second guest will be on the other side of the coin, will be Mr. Graham Dillette, Weyburn, Saskatchewan, Canadian PGA member. Unbelievable. A guy who was put together the greatest year as a rookie on the PGA Tour by a Canadian, and a guy that is now he's wrapped up finishes of 5th, 25th, and 6th, mm-hmm. and pretty impressive stuff. Won about $900,000 this year. Pretty good piece of the pie there, and he's 104th now, I believe, the money list, or 110th. Anyway, either way, it's pretty much a lock for next year, so he's got to be over the moon. So we'll have him on, talk about that. But let's go through a few things, Scotty, before we get Gar on the phone. Let's talk about... you know, we've been off for a few weeks. Obviously, I was out in Victoria for Citizens Championship, a phenomenal event out of Gorge Vale, a course that is really unheard of out there. It shouldn't be, but it is. It's a course that kind of gets lost behind the Victoria golf clubs and the Royal Colwoods and the Bear Mountains, a new kind of big public one. And it's a course that has held some great events over the years. And we had a great event with us. We had two guys go toe-to-toe, Bryn Perry and Brian McCann, two players that are probably more well-known than most across the country. And I'm surprised Bryn got mowed down by Brian at the end there. Bryn had a two-shot legal in the last round and ended up being a two-horse race. And I think the Brian birdied four of the first six holes and Bryn birdied three of the first six holes. So he still had a lead, even though Brian's 4 under par on the day through six. And it was pretty impressive golf back and forth. And Brian McCann came out on top, pretty neat. He had some tears at the end there with the speech and some of his buddies giving him the gears a little bit about that. But pretty impressive. And it was great talking to Bryn Perry, you know, a guy who played Nationwide Tour a couple years ago after that Cinderella run that he had. And he told me he can't even sleep at night. He said he's up. He knows that whenever he's going to tee it up, he's going to probably shoot 4 or 5 under par. He's just playing that well.
It's great.
And he just says that I just can't wait to play somewhere else. And he said, he's changing his venue for Q School before he goes into Texas, a little bit colder for him and a little windy. He's going to Turtle Bay in Hawaii. He said it should be perfect for him. And he's pretty excited about getting back at it. But
it's great.
Speaking of Q School, Scott, I think you have about 40 Canadians at Q School right now. It's a long, long run. For those of you who don't really know a whole lot about it, it's three stages. Some guys, it's four stages to pre-qualify. But explain a little bit to us, Scott, about Q School, about what it takes to get there. And, I mean, how many guys start off at each site and then how many guys go on typically?
Yeah, I mean, each site, I think there's 5 sites this week and 20 spots per site. I think there's, about 90 players per site, between 70 and 90 players. And so we got 40 guys trying to get down to the finals, which, you know, you get through first stage, which is, you know, the better players expect to get through first stage. I remember talking to Brad Fritch a few years ago. I was playing with him and he said, you know, it's a huge disappointment if you don't get through first stage. Yeah. Like it's devastating, especially for a guy that, you know, if you play well in the Canadian Tour, like most of the guys on there, there's, you know, I was looking at one site where there's 6 or 7 guys, the Santee, California site. And, you know, there's a lot of Canadian Tour guys in that site, but there's also a lot of guys like I've never heard of. Right. Yeah. So you would expect the Canadian Tour guys to get through that site and at least when they're there, have some confidence. Right. But, and then you get to second stage.
They're all fighting each other too. Right.
In the exactly. Same. Yeah. You get to second stage and what happens is you get PGA Tour guys that are in a certain segment of the money list and Nationwide Tour guys that come. So you would think, you know, the competition as it gets, the competition gets extremely difficult, but you would think it wouldn't get that much difficult. You keep getting down stage, but it gets really difficult as you go. And then final stage, you know, 35 spots. Actually, I think they're 30 this year.
No, there is a change, I think.
Yeah, because they give more, I think it was last year as well, but not too sure on the number of spots. But anyway, it's really difficult. You get the guys from Nationwide Tour that finished 30 or 26 to 50 on the money list or 26 to 60. So it's just, it's really difficult. So the fact that Graham Dillette was able to get through Q School first stage last year, go to first stage, actually you got an exemption, so second stage. And then, you know, he almost won Q School.
Yeah, I think he finished 7th or something.
Yeah, he finished really well. So it's a long haul. And definitely if you have a chance, watch the Golf Channel. They air the final round and you see a lot of heartbreak, but you also see a lot of the opposite.
I know we always compare it hockey to golf. How about the comparison of, you know, if you go to tryout or training camp, for example, you go to tryout and the coach goes, oh, Scott, he looks great. You know, give him a couple shifts in the preseason games.
Yeah.
Well, no one comes by and says, oh, you look great. And for exactly. for a couple holes, come have a couple shifts on the PGA Tour. It's, you got to flat out post the numbers, and you could have the, there's stories before of guys shooting 62 in one of the rounds and still missing the, missing the cut because they shot 76 the rest of the rounds. But it's, you have to do it yourself, which is the hardest part about golf, as we all know. And, you know, a guy like David Hearn, John Mills, who are right in the bubble now, the Nationwide Tour, to try and get their cards, top 25 of the Nationwide Tour, get their cards for the PGA Tour. And, you know, Dave is looking right now, I think he's, is he 26th? Mm-hmm. He's one off.
Yeah.
26 to, I think it's 40. They get a spot right into the final stage of qualifying school in the very end. So it's a nice little perk to have, but when you're that close, you want that spot, right?
Totally.
But
on a, you know, both John and Dave have made it through, got their cards in the final stage from finishing outside the top 25 on the Nationwide. So it's, hopefully for them, even though they want to get their card, they're in the back of their mind, they still have that confidence that they can get through, you know, to get their PGA Tour card if they don't finish in the top 25. So there is sort of a silver lining.
You know what's amazing? I've read a few media articles that came out, and guys talking about how no Canadians have won yet on any major tours this year.
Yeah.
And
19 year streak
in jeopardy. Yeah, he always, every time he writes about that, and you know, I sure it's a valid point, but the way I feel is that I think Canadian golf has had a pretty good run this year. When you look at the guys like Dillette, Jim Rutledge, who's had a great year, Hernan Mills playing pretty well, Albin Choi, who you may have, people probably don't even know yet. Albin Choi is a guy who won the Canadian Amateur, went to school his first year, and has won two of the first three events at school.
Yep.
There's some pretty neat names doing some.
Adam Hadwin.
I mean, there's some really cool stories about that. So I would argue that maybe the Canadians didn't win this year on any major tours, but I would say that, you know, add the money up, there might even be more money combined than what they've had. Maybe not
with the Mike Weir, because Mike Weir didn't have a very good year in Ames.
Yeah.
But I know what you're saying.
I'm saying some better finishes. But now, Scott, tell us about, we'll talk about some things that happened in golf this year. You know, there's the Tiger Woods, if we even want to bother talking about it. Probably not. There's the Ryder Cup. Don't want to talk about it?
No, I'll talk about it.
Pretty impressive event, you know.
Let's just say the one thing about Tiger Woods, he's going to lose number one. It's all in the media.
Yeah, let's talk about that ranking system.
The ranking system is brutal. He hasn't been number one for almost a year now. It'll be November since the accident.
One guy says, like, in tennis, before it was, the rankings were too volatile. It was, you know, guys changing every week. And then all of a sudden in the golf, you couldn't catch the guy for a while, no matter what. And then all of a sudden now, Tiger's going to lose it on Halloween. And someone's just going to pass him, even without playing.
Right.
Like, Lee West was going to pass him no matter what. I think Lee Westwood could just sit on the couch and eat a bag of chips.
Martin Kamer wins or finishes second in the event next week in the European Tour. But the reality is he hasn't been the number one player for almost a year. You know, I think Peter Robinson was talking about that in Score Golf. And my feeling is that Tiger will regain number one at some point. He even said himself, you know, it's been a tough year, obviously, but he's been working. He worked with two coaches in 1 year. And, you know, I think his work with Sean Foley, once that starts to, you know, the results that Sean Foley's been able to produce for Sean O'Hare, for Jamie Lovemark. You look at Jamie Lovemark, number one
first
on Nationwide Tour, like, unbelievable, right? And Hunter Mahan, like, those three there outside of his other students or his other pupils. If you look at Lori Kane, I mean, she's had a pretty good year, or at least had one good tournament in Canada. I think Tiger will get back to number one. And, you know.
Now, speaking of lessons, have you been giving Hunter Mahan chipping lessons?
I said that when we were watching it. I said we were at the fall championship, and I said to one of the guys, I go, that looked like me out there, like total chili dip. But the one good thing, it shows that those guys are human, and you know, the pressure's there, and those shots happen. They happen to me a lot more often than they happen to him.
Yeah. But, our Canadian PGA executive director, Gary Bernard, was there with some of the crew for some meetings and whatnot. And he said that no matter what happens to him ever in his career, he said, I'm going to try and make it so I can go to every single Ryder Cup until the day I die in Europe. Mm-hmm. He said, it's going to be something that my wife and I are going to do, go down there. We're going to go make ourselves have a trip, vacation type thing, and make it around that. He said it was that impressive.
Really?
He said it was just, you know, standing out or sitting on the first tee there, you know, every time a player came up, the crowd would sing the national anthem from where that player was from. He said it was just unbelievable. It was just something totally different, right? And just the fans were just crazy. And, you know, sometimes people carve the USA, they have the one chant, right? The USA over and over again. And we've all heard it a million times. We hear it at the hockey games, you know, but he said it was pretty special, the Europeans, to what they did.
Well, one thing to tie the Tiger Woods into the Ryder Cup is that from a positive perspective, Tiger Woods was 3-1. And in his last match, like, he absolutely just mashed Molinari I think he had 6 birdies and an eagle in the match that he played against him. Yeah. So if that's a sign of anything, which perhaps it is, 3-1 record, when a lot of people counted him out, they even said, you know, maybe he should sit during the four ball and foursomes. And, you know, he proved that, you know, he can still play, obviously. I mean, best player maybe ever, maybe. Now
we're off to Florida, Scott. You and I both down for the Canadian PGA Club Professional Championship. Telson Footjoy, the big supporters of that event, obviously, and an event that's I think is a great event. I mean, it's an event that this is our 7th year now down there, and people always ask us, well, why is it in Florida? You know, and a couple guys even said, oh, I don't know, I have to have a passport to go to Kokodo play my own national championship, right? But it's a move we made with our sponsors that went down there, and it seems like guys love it. You know, they're away from the club. It's in the off season for them. If we had it in the summertime, there'd be guys checking their Blackberries for the latest email about tea times or another event or, you know, lessons, you name it, type thing, right? But it seems like guys are away. And the Ontario Zone has made a smart move by bundling almost. You do a pro-am down there after our club pro, the way guys can kind of play them both. What's your feelings on the club pro event? You've been involved since day one, since been down there, basically.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a great event. I mean, the guys, there's a real tour feeling to the event. Yeah. Guys are treated like PGA Tour players. I mean, the first year we were down there, every player got a pair of shoes, you know, the newest shoes that weren't even available on the market.
One year we had Pro V1s before they came out, and they had those white boxes, like the white plain. And Ted Manning, who's a CEO of Acushnet, said he made it a point to tell the guys, here's a box, guys. Make sure you let me know what you think when you guys come back. So they felt engaged, and they all came back and they gave their own suggestions about. It was soft on the greens.
Overall,
it was hard here, you know.
It's you know, it's a good event. There's a lot more positive comments, overwhelmingly positive comments about the event, about the venue. The venue is great. PGA Village, they treat the Canadian PGA Club professionals unbelievably.
Yeah.
And
the same as they treat their own members.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, the staff there is good. And it's just, you know, an overall great, fun event that is a staple, quite frankly, on the Canadian PGA schedule, and it should be for many years to come.
Yeah, and I think every year we've been lucky enough to have an exemption from the RBC Canadian Open, and we'll have it again this year. So for the guys who are, you know, certain guys know that they're probably not going to be in the hunt. They're there to play some quality golf, and they're obviously all great players, but it's usually about, you know, 15, 20 guys that are down there, and they want that exemption.
Who do you like? Who do you like?
I was actually looking at the list the other day, and, you know, you can't go, you got to like Jeff Buter. You know, Jeff Buter, a guy who last year led for 53 straight holes. He was in the first group, I think, of the first day, and he birdied the first hole. And he made a bogey in the last hole. Ben Boudreau finished birdie in the last hole, 2-shot swing. All of a sudden, a playoff. Everyone's kind of surprised by that. They go back to the 18th tee, which is the hardest hole in the golf course, and Ben birdies it again. He makes 2 birdies. I think there was like 3 birdies there all day, and he made 2 in about 10 minutes to steal it. And you can see Jeff's face almost shocked. And he's finished, I think, 3rd and 5th before. So he's right up there. Yeah. But, you know, I think there's a few other guys. I wish I had all the names right here in front of me right now, but there's a few other guys
Mark Girard, for sure.
Yeah.
He's a guy lost in a playoff year before to Kyle.
Yeah.
And I think Mark is close. And he had a really good year in Quebec, the best year out of all the guys. Wow. He won their club pro championship. Fortunately, he couldn't be at the Titleist Cup. He had some prior commitments, which was not good to see because he's a staple on that team.
Sure.
They could have used him. But no, I mean, I like Mark for sure. You can't always, you always got to have a guy like Danny King.
Yeah.
Ian Doig is back down there this year. Ian's not playing as well as he'd like, but he's going to Champions Tour Q School.
You got to think Kyle's the kind of guy. I mean, he won it recently and he might be back there again. And I think that, you know, Daniel Talbot's playing this year.
Daniel
had that great run this year on the Champions Tour event, right? And I mean, we've been lucky enough. We've had great events this year. We've had, you know, our three champions this year, Jim Rutledge and our seniors, our brand new Mr. Lube event was fantastic. He put on an absolute show there, and guys are really happy to kind of see him. And actually, I saw an interview with him last week, and they asked him, what a great year, what a great run, what's your highlight of your year? And he said, my highlight of the year is my Canadian PGA Senior title I won this year in July, that's which great. Is pretty cool, right? You know, yeah. I had a great year, a rookie season on the Champions Tour, and his highlight is our event, obviously. And, you know, we had Laura Brevard, who was a girl from Michigan who won our women's championship, and kind of a neat story too. A girl was kind of pondering about maybe what she can do with her life and where things are going, and kind of embodied that whole mini tour type personality of somebody who arrived, drove all night to get there, didn't even play a practice round. Just grabbed a yardage book, grabbed a Sky Caddy from our sponsor to use that first round, shot 66, just kind of fell in love with the golf course. And then when she finished her round, she was doing an interview with some of the media and she had to take off because they had to race because she was going to caddy for her friend in the Monday qualifier the next morning in, I forget where it was, somewhere else, right? But kind of a neat story there. And we had another great event, a bit of a coming out party for Stephanie Sherlock, Sue Kim, a couple of Team Canada players. And then out west, we had another great event in Victoria. So a pretty strong year for us, pretty happy about that. And hopefully it continues down the CPC. But we'll head to break right now, folks. We'll come back. We'll talk to Mr. Gar Hamilton, the head professional at Mississauga Golf Country Club, a man who's won that club pro I just talked about four times. And will give us some of his favorite memories and some of his favorite stories over the years, and as well what he's going to do with his time. Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll go read a couple of books. Maybe he'll travel around the country. When you're a golf pro, you're usually you're stuck where you are for about 7 months of the year guaranteed, and you no chance to go away for the weekend, go to someone's cottage, for example. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really happen very often. So we'll chat with Gar when we come back on the Canadian PGA Radio Show. Well, welcome back to the Canadian PGA Radio Show. Jeff Dykeman here alongside Scotty Pritchard. And Scotty, the guest we have on right now, unbelievable, a legend to most of us, almost all of us across the country, a friend of yours, a friend of mine, a guy who's been a mentor to us as well. I'll read his whole resume. Actually, no, I won't. You know what? We're going to run out of breath the whole way if we get down the whole thing. But four-time Canadian PGA Club Professional Champion, a Canadian PGA Seniors Champion. He's been the head professional at Mississauga Golf Country Club for 23 years, I believe. Played in the Canadian Tour, won the Canadian Tour, played in the PGA Tour, played in the Champions Tour. I mean, you name it, he's done it all. And his name, as everyone probably can guess by now, Mr. Gar Hamilton, head professional at Mississauga Golf Country Club. And he's joining us now live on the phone. Gar, how are you today?
Great, Jeff. Thank you very much.
No problem. Gar, I don't know where we should start with this. You've announced that you're going to retire next year after a great run at Mississauga. Tell us a bit about why next year is the right time for you to walk away.
Well, I think you get a feeling of you sort of tend to know when it's time, and you know, I'm really looking forward to it. Having said that, I'm very happy, and I'm looking forward to a great year next season, but the year after I think will be great to take it easy a little.
And Gar, what are your, I guess it's, you know, you still have a year left to go at Mississauga, but you must be chomping at the bit to get back out and play. I know that in the last few years, you haven't played as much as you'd like just because of the nature of being at Mississauga and how busy it is, but you must have some pretty good aspirations to get back out and be competitive.
Yeah, I can. You know, I continue to try to work at it when I have time, and it has been a little tough. And we're not getting any younger, but I still feel like I have a little something left in the tank. Maybe one more real fun event like I had with the Senior Tour. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Actually, swinging the club not too badly.
Now, Gar, tell us about, you're kind of the poster boy for, you know, a guy, a club professional that can play, that can teach, that can run events, that can merchandise, you name it. You kind of had the whole act, as they say. Tell us about, one, how tough that is to do, and two, was that something that you kind of taught yourself, or do you have, you know, other mentors, other pros that taught you how to do the whole gamut?
Well, as you know, I came from the playing end of the game primarily. I hadn't really thought about being a club professional until I realized that I wasn't going to win the Masters as quickly as I wanted to. So I wanted to be successful, and I had a business degree from a great university, Indiana, and I just turned my attention, you know, to the administrative part of the game and helping people learn the game, and I've enjoyed it immensely. There's always time to play, and it's something that you've got to work at it, there's no doubt, but I've enjoyed all aspects of our profession. It's just fabulous.
And Gar, what, you know, if you look back, and I guess it would be the early 1980s, what was really the impetus behind switching from playing to being a club professional? Or is there a certain moment that you can look back on and sort of was maybe the light bulb went off, or you just sort of had enough, or what was it that happened?
Well, I think, in 1980, I'd gone back onto the tour and been pretty successful. You could keep playing if you made some cuts. So I made about six cuts in a row. But if you missed one, you were out. So I missed one in the fall. But it's been going pretty well. And I've been working with my friend George Knudsen, who was a tremendous mentor to many of us in the game. I guess I went back to the tour school and in the finals missed about a 3-footer on the last hole and I lost out by a shot. So, I was 30 years old and decided, I don't want to just hang around forever, being an also-ran. So I had an opportunity with some of the manufacturing companies, but I didn't think I could turn my back on the game really that much. So I got in the club professional and never looked back. It's been fabulous.
Tell us, what are you going to miss about working in Mississauga? I mean, I'm sure you've got some great friendships, some great relationships, but, what is it you're going to miss the most about being there in Mississauga every day?
Well, possibly the routine, I suppose, early in the morning. Like, I'm an early person, so I'm in there pretty early and enjoy seeing the guys right off the bat and the ladies and so forth. We ran the annual ladies golf spiel this morning, which was, for the curlers. And so it's a one shot a year for them, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, I enjoy helping the people enjoy their leisure time. So I suppose that'll be a little transition period.
Now, what do you plan on doing with your time come 2012, 2013? Are you going to be, we probably see your wife a little bit more often. You'll probably be, maybe going to Starbucks, having a coffee and reading a book. Who knows? But what's your plan for some of your spare time?
Well, I may actually visit a few friends of ours around North America through the summer, which has been an impossibility for the last 30 years, basically. But I don't have any big specific plans at the moment. I think I'd like, I'll try to continue to play and play some tournament golf and do some teaching. And I don't have a real, I don't have a big strategy at the moment.
Now, Gar, we've had quite a few guests on the show in the last little while. And one of them, the people that do have a friendship or had a friendship with Mo Norman, we like to hear some stories. And Ken Tarling was on a few weeks ago. He told us a great story. So, we'd like to put you on the spot a little bit here and maybe tell us your favorite Mo story that maybe was involving you or maybe involving someone else. I know that there's a lot of Ken Benning, Mo Norman stories and Greg Podlaski stories, but perhaps you have one that, is near and dear to your heart or even humorous for that matter.
Well, I was very fortunate in my career to, to know Mo as a kid, actually. I think I got invited to play in the Ontario Open. I was about 16 years old, and I got to play with Mo for the first time. So that was quite a thrill. And, he'd been a good friend to me and a good guy ever since. I mean, he was always there for you to, if you ever need anything. I mean, we know he was an autistic sort of a savant and so forth. Not always generous with his time with certain people, but he was just wonderful to me and a lot of his friends playing. I suppose I had some some strange occurrences with Mo. I mean, the first time I was fortunate enough to win my first Canadian Tour event was in a playoff with Mo, and he surprisingly missed about a 2-foot putt as he continued to putt out, and it threw me off. It was the toughest probably 2-putt from 20 feet I've ever had in my life.
Wow.
At the Manitoba Open. But the thing about Mo that was always great is, I mean, he was such a genius with the golf swing and the game. Is you'd be practicing and he'd be watching you a little bit and I'd say, "What do you think, Mo? What do you think?" He says, "Good. It's good. It looks good." What am I doing differently? Or what do you like, Mo? You know. He would never actually tell you.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really funny. He would just go, you know. And meanwhile, I wouldn't be asking him if I knew for sure.
Yeah.
But he was a riot, and he was just a lot of people didn't realize how generous and how wonderful he was with children and what a dear man he was, and it was just it was quite quite an honor to know him all those years and have the opportunity to play with him and compete against him.
Yeah. Well, Gar, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk to you a little bit about the Titleist Cup. And 2 years in a row you've won, and after a 16-year drought in Ontario.
Stranglehold.
Ontario hadn't won in 16 years. You come on the scene as the captain, and what do you know? We got a 2-year winning streak going. Now, I've been lucky enough to travel with you and be a part of the team in terms of administrating, but I sort of been thinking about, like, there's a lot of strategy that you're putting in place with respect to the pairings that you're choosing. And do you really think that has a lot to do with it? Or is there one thing that, again, you could pinpoint onto why the success of the Ontario team?
Well, we obviously try, and you've been with me every step of the way, Scotty. We try to put the pairings together with, you know, the best guys, how they'll mesh together and camaraderie and so forth. But I'm really just so proud of our boys the last couple of years. They really sort of developed a never look back attitude, and you know, winning is attitude, and we're really developing it once again here, and it's we've been able to create a really strong team atmosphere the last couple of seasons, and it's sort of a one for all for one. It's just been terrific to be part of it, to be honest with you.
There was a real sense, a real feeling this year. I felt that there wasn't a doubt that we were going to win. No one doubted that we were going to, like, we were there, we were going to win, and that was it. There was really no talk of loss. It was a really interesting dynamic, didn't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the boys had a lot of confidence, and you know, when the conditions get tough, I mean, we've always had excellent players in Ontario, and as you know, we've helped to level the playing field a little in the last 3 or 4 years, and I've tightened up the playing categories and so forth, and we're pretty even keel now with Quebec, and we've always had a great relationship with the players and with the Quebec PGA, but we've always been we've never taken a back seat to them either, and I think the boys realize that, and they can see it, and it's just been it's been thrilling, and you know, I mean, if I can be a tiny part of it by adding a little confidence, I've been around so long, I know most of the guys, so maybe I can add a little confidence here and there to certain people that I know the way their personalities are. So it's really fun. I wouldn't consider myself close to a Ryder Cup guy or anything, but it's been very enjoyable.
Now,
although since I haven't played, we've been winning. I'm not sure that's
right. Yeah, what's that all about?
But it's been a real thrill to be associated with the guys.
Now, Gar, final question for you. It seems almost fitting that you're going to retire next year. It's the year of the Canadian PGA Centennial, the 100th anniversary, and you've been around for so long and done so many great things for the association, but I want to ask you, how proud are you to be a Canadian PGA member?
Well, it's thrilled. It's been my whole life. As I say, I've been a Canadian PGA member one way or the other, I think for 38 years.
Wow.
Ever since I graduated from university and went to the Canadian Tour School and was associated, you know, at age 22, 23, and I'm 61, so it's been a tremendous thrill, and it's been a great honor to be the last 22 years at Mississauga. It was a dream come true. If I wasn't going to be able to, as I say, win the U.S. Open, I couldn't think of anything better.
Well, Gar, like I said before, you've been a great friend to Scott and I, and you've also been a great ambassador for the Canadian PGA, a guy that has really done it all, and is probably one of the poster boy for almost a perfect club professional. So thanks again for everything you've done, and I'm sure we will see you next year. We'll swing by Mississauga to make sure we shake your hand one last time.
Well, thanks, Jeff and Scott, and thank you guys for being such a strong, young, innovative people in our Canadian PGAs and Ontario PGAs. It's great that the future is in hands like yourselves. Thanks very much, guys.
Beautiful.
Thanks, Gar.
Okay, take care.
There he is, Scott Gar Hamilton. What a guy. I mean, let's be honest. The guy is one of those poster boys for almost a perfect club professional.
Yeah.
I mean, to have playing skills to be that good. Mm-hmm. And he always jokes around, and that's typical Gar, but he'd say, you know, it isn't me. I've got a team in Mississauga. They always help me out. I hire the right guys, and which is important too. That's an important part of being a club professional, is making sure you may not be the best merchandising guy, playing guy, teacher, organizer of tournaments, the whole deal, right? So he knows that his skills are in whatever aspect. So he hires somebody else who's got some other skills, and they're all part of one team that he happens to be the boss of. But I'm sure you've had so many encounters with him that he's been a big help for you guys, probably Ontario, right?
Definitely.
It's pretty funny about Mo. It's a typical Mo story, right? Like, what do you think? You know, that's typical, right? But what a guy, a great career. And I'm sure it went in there. Typically, it seems like clubs like that, the bigger name clubs, the head pro's been there for a long time, stays on for, you know, 5, 10, 15. I was actually at Oakdale about a month ago, and Wilf Hominick is out there on the driving range teaching. Yeah. He's giving a couple of lessons. He's just kind of hang, almost like a club ambassador, right? Mm-hmm. And
definitely,
he may only do 100 lessons a year, but he's there to kind of be that guy. And
well, that's what they've done at for Gar. He didn't mention it, but he's actually staying on as pro emeritus. Or
okay,
I think that's
yeah.
And so he's staying on for the year, and or for a couple years actually. And you know, he maybe even look at the possibility of becoming the head teaching pro there.
Yeah, why not?
And you know, he's definitely going to be around and play the club and that sort of thing, and be an ambassador, right? Mm. So it's pretty cool thing.
Now he hasn't played in as many events this year in your zone, or he hasn't just played very well. One or the other.
Well, he was playing well at the beginning of the year. He actually won. He won twice, three times this year.
All right.
He won the super senior division in the first senior event of the year. He won the head pro assistant pro with Jeremy Broom, and he won the senior pro junior pro with Scott Bogle. So he was playing well at the beginning of the year. I think that you know, as the season progressed. And I mean, they run a million events at that golf course. There's an event almost every day.
And they're major events.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you can see where, you know, at the beginning of the year, he's playing a bit better. And but the thing with Gar, he's always, you know, Gar's always good for an even par around around there, right? Yeah. So, but no, I definitely like to see, him dedicated back to it and
see what you can do.
Some records being broken, definitely.
Well, he hasn't played in the last couple of years in the senior championship, but you and I always joke around with it too. You say, "Oh, Gar, how'd you play today?" "Ah, it was sloppy. And 70, right? 70. Yeah. How'd it go today?" "Oh, not very good today, you know, and they shoot 72 type thing." But I think he's ready to come back and make a bit of a run at it.
But that's the thing, when you're used to shooting, you know, 67, 65, 68. So it's, you know. So,
yeah.
And Gar's, you know, the type of guy, when he leaves things out there on the golf course, that in terms of score or putts being missed or shots, it bothers him, right?
And
it bothers him more than it bothers most guys.
I meant to tell him our 2009-8 Club Pro Champion, Kyle German. Mm-hmm. Kyle told me, he said, because 1 year I think we paired him with Gar, and he came down and said that he was almost nervous to play with Gar Hamilton. He said, "I'm living across the country, and he's one of the few guys that I know from out here that I know quite well. I think he's almost a celebrity in my mind. I can't wait to play with this guy."
Yeah.
And I told Gar, and Gar was like, "Oh, I can't believe that." And Gar didn't believe me, right? And I said, "No, it's like, this is a guy from out west who wants to play with you, and he's almost nervous to tee it up with you. Like, he's, you know, like he's a big name PGA Tour player, right?" But anyway, a nice little segue. We go from a guy who's retiring to a guy who's just starting. Our next guest after the break will be Mr. Graham Dillette from Weyburn, Saskatchewan. He's won close to $900,000. This year, including about 300 in the last 3 weeks. So I'm sure he'll say he's not in the clear yet, but we all know he is. He's got his card for next year, but I'm sure I heard him say actually in an interview that he wants to keep playing until the snow flies in December if he can find it, because he's playing that well. But we'll come back. We'll get Graham on the phone and talk to him about the incredible season, one that apparently is in the record books now as the greatest rookie season ever by a Canadian, which is impressive.
Yeah.
So we'll chat with Graham when we come back on the Canadian PGA Radio Show. Welcome back to the Canadian PGA Radio Show. Jeff Dykeman here alongside Scott Pritchard. And Scotty joining us now live on the phone. One of the hotter golfers on the planet right now, born and raised in Weyburn, Saskatchewan. A guy we've had on a few times on the show, and for 2 years in a row now, closing the show off with us. A bit of a poster boy for the fall series events this year. He's finished fifth. He's finished 25th and sixth last three events. And looks like he has his card locked up for 2011 on the PGA Tour. Live on the phone from Las Vegas, Mr. Graham Dillette. Graham, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, guys.
Graham, let's talk about the last couple of weeks. You know, you had almost close to a month off. I know you had the schedule was a little bit sparse there with the Ryder Cup going on and a few other things in the playoffs, but almost a month off, you come right out of the gate in the fall series like a rocket, and now you've had these great finishes and vaulted up the money list. But that month, did that give you a chance to kind of recharge your batteries, and have you had a great little run here because you think of that month off you had so far?
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely kind of starting to get burned out. I was playing, you know, more golf than I ever have in my life, really, this year. It was, you know, I'll do it differently next year for sure. I'll play less events, I'm sure. But, yeah, the month off was great. I mean, I actually played in the Boise Open, the Nationwide Tour event in Boise, where I live now. And, you know, I didn't play well, but it was just kind of, I hadn't played in a couple of weeks. So it was nice just to kind of stay at home for a tournament, you know, sleep in my own bed, all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, great fall series. It was a lot of fun playing kind of the golf that I really expected of myself, for, you know, feel like that I should have been playing all year. But it was nice to at least get a month of it in, and you know, playing next year out here is was my main goal going into the year. So it's a great feeling. I mean, I'm on cloud nine right now. Hopefully, I can you know, play well here in Vegas as well. But you know, that's kind of besides the fact. I'm just here for a good time this week more than anything.
Now, Graham, what do you attribute your, you know, you're playing so well in the last few events, and, you know, you sort of were tapering off there at the end. You missed a few cuts, and you know, the pressure was probably really on you to achieve the goal that you just mentioned. So, like, did you work with your coach for that month, or is there something that you can pinpoint that, you know, really helped you come firing right out of the gates, like Jeff said?
You know, not really. I think... basically, more than anything, I had a nice clean head, you know, starting because of the time we had off. And I think that, you know, obviously knew that I had some work to do, you know, in the fall series. And, you know, I didn't go into the tournaments any different, you know, it was physically, but I think mentally I was just a little bit more sharp and aware of what was going on. And, you know, I was able to just kind of focus on each shot at a time. And I think that was, kind of the main reason why I've been playing well here the last 3 weeks.
Now, Graham, I believe you're going to be playing, once you play two more events, you probably have 29 events under your belt. How many events will we see you play next year, you think?
Yeah, it's going to be less than that for sure. it'll be nice next year because, you know, I know that I'll be in every, other than the majors and the World Golf Championship events, I'll be able to play in every single event. And this year, you know, I had to kind of keep playing so that I didn't fall down in the reshuffle,
right.
You know, so that I was able to get in tournaments later in the year. So I think it'll be a little bit easier next year. You know, my wife and I will probably, and my coaches will just sit down and, you know, get a game plan and put out a, you know, make a tentative schedule in January and just try to stick to that. I think next year I'll play 3-4 weeks max in a row and probably take 2 weeks off at a time instead of just one, because like this year when I did take a week off, I went back to Boise or whatever for a week. But if you take a week off, you still have to be playing all the time.
Yeah.
Because you can't just take a week off and then just go right to a tournament the next week. So I think with 2 weeks off, you can take, you know, 6-7 days completely away from the game and, you know, just kind of just a slight recharge of the batteries and then, you know, practice up the next week and then get back on the road for another 3 or 4 weeks. So I think that's going to be kind of the plan. You know, we'll see how it all pans out next year, but that's kind of what I think I'm going to probably try to do. And I think that, you know, like this year, if I would have played 3 or 4 less events, I probably would have made more money, which is, you know, weird. You think you got to be out there because there's, you know, these guys are playing for so much money every week. But if you're not there mentally, there's no point of even being there. You might as well go fishing in Alaska. So get away from it all. And, you know, you're better off playing less events and being mentally there each week.
So Graham, you were speaking of money. Now you made, I think, close to $900,000 or slightly over. And what's that like for a guy like you, a young guy? You know, obviously you made some money on the Canadian Tour and on the Sunshine Tour, but this is sort of new territory for you. Is it overwhelming, or is there any, you know, how do you stay grounded with, you know, making that kind of money?
Yeah, it is a little bit kind of surreal. Still, you have to kind of pinch yourself when you see it. You know, the earnings after each week and that kind of thing. But, you know, I got a great support cast around me. My wife makes sure that, you know, I don't get too big-headed or whatever, and she's the most important person in my life and, you know, my family and stuff. And, you know, I was raised in small town Saskatchewan where, you know, the most important things are money. It's you know, it's all about family and working hard and that kind of thing. So hopefully I can continue to, you know, be like that for the rest of my life and career. And but it is pretty amazing, the money and the difference, you know, in lifestyle and everything that comes along with it.
Well, it's funny too. I was looking at some of the stats. Like, I believe you made $150,000 this week. You know, the one year you had that amazing year in the Canadian Tour, I think you made $130,000. So it's just remarkable the differences. But I want to ask you a little bit about, you know, what's your plan on things to work on? If you look at the stats right now, I think you're in the top six in driving distance. You're in the top two in total driving, top 10 in greens regulation. I mean, you've got some stats up there that are up there with guys who consistently win year in and year out. You know, where are we going to see you put most of your work in the off season?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have to start holing more putts. That's there's no question about that. And like, you know, you play with guys here every week, week in and week out, and a lot of the times it's not very impressive. Like, you'd think PGA Tour players, you know, they're just like, they're amazing. They strike the ball so well, but they really don't. But what's amazing is, you know, they get a wedge in their hand or anything inside 100, 120 yards or whatever, and they're really good. And they're, you know, that's where I need to kind of focus most of my attention. But at the same time, you know, ball striking is, you know, kind of been my strength my whole life, you know, not just this year on the PGA Tour. And you still have to work at your strengths, because that's the reason that I'm where I am right now. And so I'm not going to neglect, you know, hitting balls in the range and that kind of thing. But I definitely do need to get better around the greens.
Now, it's funny that you say that about PGA Tour players, because there is, you know, there is maybe that misconception. But tell us about maybe this year, a guy that you played with this year that sort of blew you out of the water. You're just like, wow, this guy can really play.
Ricky Fowler, man. The kid he has got everything. Like, I mean, he is probably, I mean, I haven't played with Tiger and Phil or any of these guys or whatever, but he's the most impressive. And you can just see the potential and the maturity that he has as a young kid. And I mean, it's pretty impressive, and he's going to be here for a long time. And yeah, I mean, he's probably the, you know, most impressive player I saw this year.
Now, Graham, tell us about also for this year, any players that you played with that, you know, you had a great time with, guys that maybe were telling a few jokes, or just kind of guys that were good guys, guys that you might not think of. Sometimes people think that, well, you want to play the best player, which is obviously true, but any guys that would surprise us that you said, well, this guy's just a great, flat out great guy.
Yeah, you know, the guys that I really get, like Alex Chayka is an awesome guy. We've had some good times this year. I enjoy playing with him a lot. James Nitties as well is an awesome guy. You know, I got along with Mike real well. It was unfortunate he was battling some injuries, so we didn't get to play very much together. But, you know, there's a lot of great guys. But those two, you know, stand out. I hang out and play a lot with Troy Merritt, who went to Boise State, you know. Yeah, I've played quite a few practice rounds with Ricky Fowler as well, because him and Troy are good buddies. So, you know, I get along pretty well with everyone, but those kind of guys probably stand out more than anyone.
So, Graham, when you look back on this year, the fact that you got your card for next year pretty much all wrapped up, what was the highlight of the year for you? You know, if you look back, pinpoint one specific time during the year, what was really the highlight for you?
Probably just being on the driving range at the Sony Open when, you know, first event of the year. Ernie was right next to me on the range, and I was just like, wow, like, this is it. Like, I'm here. And that was, I'll never forget that for my entire life. I mean, that was probably the most special moment of the year for me. But, you know, a good finish in Houston was huge, and, you know, kind of got my confidence going. And then last week, I'll always remember that as well, when I kind of clinched my card for the first time, and pretty special as well.
Now, question for you, Graham, about the Canadian Open this year. I mean, you missed the cut by one, which I know you did about six times this year. So, I mean, the money you had this year, you could have been in the clear weeks in advance. But the Canadian Open this year, there was some pretty good buzz behind you. A lot of action going on there, and obviously with Golf Canada kind of changing their whole marketing campaign and their branding. But anything kind of shock you at all? I mean, if you walked around the first hole, there was a second tee deck right there. There was a big giant sign with you holding your Golf Canada card. I mean, when you got there, when you kind of saw that, was it kind of like, wow, this is for real now type thing?
Yeah, I mean, like, I've had so much support all the way across Canada, you know, from Weyburn to Saskatoon to all Saskatchewan, Western Canada, out east. And, you know, it's been great. I mean, and to be recognized, you know, by Golf Canada to put me on those, you know, billboards and stuff like that, it was pretty cool. And I'm happy to be a part of it. And I think Golf Canada's, you know, they're on a really good track to, with their strategic plan to try to get more guys out from Canada. And I think it's going to happen.
Now, Graham, final question for you. Talk about, if you look at the Canadians, up and coming guys, maybe not, you know, the David Hearns or the John Mills, but guys maybe on the Canadian tour that are lesser known. Is there one guy that stands out that you is a lock to, you know, maybe not get on the tour this year, but definitely have a career on the PGA tour in your mind?
Yeah, I would say that there's lots of guys that have the potential. I mean, like James Love and Andrew Parr and Richard Scott. You know, Wes is obviously a great player, has been for a long time. And, I mean, it's only a matter of time before at least one of those guys breaks out. And I apologize if I'm, you know, forgetting any of my buddies back home in Canada. But, you know, it's there's a lot of guys with a lot of talent. And, you know, as Canadians, it's unfortunate that we only have, you know, three or four guys out on the PGA Tour. But you also have to remember that it's not easy to get out here. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great players, you know, around the world, and there's a lot of great players in Canada, and it's only a matter of time before, you know, another guy kind of breaks out. But, you know, I think we have a lot of pride, and we want to see more guys out there, but people just don't realize how difficult it is.
Yeah, I think it's so true. We always talk about how in the NHL they have about 750 spots for guys to play. In the PGA Tour, there's only 125, right? So if you're playing third-line NHL, that's equivalent to playing the Canadian Tour type. So it shows you how deep it actually is and how hard it is.
There's a lot more people that play golf around the world than hockey.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Graham, you know, awesome stuff, man. It's been awesome to watch you. I know we've all enjoyed it, and I'm sure you've enjoyed the run as well. But we're proud to have you as a Canadian PGA member, and make sure you enjoy the off season and keep it going. And I'm sure we'll see you plenty more weekends on TV. We'll see you next year on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Much appreciated.
Congratulations, thanks, Graham.
All right, take care.
Thanks. Graham Dillette, Scotty, I like him at about, if he plays you in a match, I like him at about 10 and 8, guaranteed. No, what a story, what a run.
With strokes, though?
With strokes, yeah. I'd probably give you about, his team gets probably about a plus 8, and you're about an 8, so 16 shots, yeah. No, pretty impressive year, eh, Scott? Have you had a chance to watch, keep an eye on him? I mean, I know you kind of keep an eye on all the kind of different tours, but what's impressed you the most about his year so far?
The fact that what's really impressive is the fact that he came out after the Ryder Cup, after we'll call it the break, and secured his card in three events.
Yeah, knowing full well that he had to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. That is the most impressive thing to me because there's guys grinding out there. And I mean, he's actually getting coverage on PGAtour.com. He's getting coverage, you know, on the blogs, following all the blogs. Like, people are starting to recognize him outside of Canada, which is impressive.
You know what's funny? Someone wrote a story. I'll reference two things here, but the first one was someone wrote a story about how Graham is the perfect poster child for how the fall series events work and why it's so important, right? And I thought it was weird that he finished 25th in the one event and he basically just moved up one spot. Like it's so tight, right?
Well, even if you look nationwide, David Hearn finished T4 and he moved up one spot.
And how about John Mills?
No, four spot. Yeah, he didn't.
Didn't he move?
Yeah, he finished T5-6 or something like that. Maybe that's what I was thinking. But yeah, like
today the PGA Tour had an article on their website saying top 10 reasons to watch the fall series, and Graham was number 5.
Yeah.
And it didn't just say watch some great young players. It said number 5, Graham Dillette. And it said the Canadian media was, you know, abuzz about this guy before the season started, and then it kind of tailed off. But this is why he's out here type thing, right? And you know, I didn't want to say it to him, and I'm glad he brought up about his putting that he has to hold more putts. And I think you purposely,
because it said 166. Yeah, right. I read that before we came.
And I'm sure that I think it happens. You know, anybody who's played golf knows that the more greens you hit, I mean, someone like Brad Faxon, for example, for years was hitting, you know, 11, 12 greens, and he'd have 27 putts. Now, he's a very good putter.
Yeah.
If Graham's hitting 98% of the greens, which he was in some rounds during the events, mm-hmm. You know, it's your putts are going to automatically be a little bit higher.
Yeah.
But the key stat is how many greens regulation.
I think keep it around 30, 32 putts and you're doing well.
Yeah. I mean, he has the right, he has the tools for sure to go out there and win, I think, more often than we think. I think we'll be surprised at how well it goes, which is obviously great. So, but there it is, Scott, the show, one more season wrapped up. Thanks to yourself for
a
little bit of pinch hitting there, and then came and kind of grabbed the torch there. It was great for us, and we'll meet in the off season, talk about next year.
Contract negotiations,
kind of see where it goes. And it's funny, everywhere I go, it seems like people are still asking me about the show. I know we had a few weeks off. We should apologize for, but we were kind of, you know, busy in different areas. And it's funny
how we were Canadian PGA assistants, Titleist Cup,
all the stuff we talked about earlier. Yeah, and so we'll. You know, we can go back and regroup and figure out what the plans are for next year and go forward. Obviously, thanks to our friend Greg with On Purpose Productions, he kind of stepped up there and helped us out with the studio and we'll go from there. But, as always, folks, you can follow us, cpga.com. We're heading to Florida in a few weeks. A tough job ahead into Florida and putting on the Club Professional Championship, and we'll have a brand new champion who'll be playing the Canadian Open. So one more guy we can follow next year for sure. So have a great off season, and we will see you next year on the Canadian PGA Radio Show.